Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Tooth and Claw. It's another animal attack news roundup, and that's really all that needs to be said. So we hope you enjoy it. Let's do it.
Tooth and Claw!
Hey everyone.
Jeff coming out the gates strong. What are you feeling so chipper about?
Yeah, why are you so excited, dude?
Oh man, just happy. The trees are finally blossoming and it's just
I'm jealous
nice,
of that.
You know?
I'm glad you're happy.
Mike.
What's up?
You got a new car.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to get it once you like...
It took about 5 months. So they they built it completely in Japan, which means technically I have a foreign import right now, which is cool to car people, I guess. I don't know. It feels exactly like my old car just because it's another Honda Civic. I get in it and I'm just like, well, here we are again, even though it's like 14 years newer.
Yeah, you had your old car for a long time.
How fast have you gone in it?
I've gone over 40.
Nice.
Okay.
How quick does it get to that?
Depends on if I have econ mode on or not. Nice. Which I'm still not exactly sure what that does, but
hey, we're proud of you though.
Yeah, thanks.
If money didn't matter, what do you think your primary car you would drive would be?
I'd want a big decked out Sprinter van.
Ooh.
Like one that has like a bed in it and a stove and all the little accoutrements. A
lot of room for activities.
Room for activities.
That's like what you would drive around town?
Maybe. It was just like a drive around town.
That's
a
good answer. Yeah.
I would just want like something electric.
Yeah. So I was going to pick. How about you, Jeff? Yeah. Would you go lifestyle, the rich and the famous?
Dude, I'd probably want a BMW. Last car was one and it's such a fun drive. But like I always got speeding tickets because I never realized how fast I was going. I got like 72 speeding tickets.
Old Leadfoot Larson, they used to call you. Do you guys ever look down on Larsons that spell their name E-M instead of O-N?
I think it's mostly just that they're like Swedish or something, which I look down on the Swedish. Yeah.
That's your right as a Norwegian.
Yeah.
With that 72 speeding ticket thing, it reminded me, Mike and Wes, we worked for that event company, Alpine Event Rentals.
Yeah.
You guys both did a little for them,
That's
too.
That's right, yeah.
Every once in a while,
you remember that guy who told me that he had been in 105 car accidents?
George.
And he would, like, get in car accidents on purpose.
I love that guy.
This is the weirdest lie anyone's ever told me.
That is very strange. Hey, so last time we talked, we were gearing up for the Oscars, which ended up being kind of a weird Oscars.
Yeah. Can we do a little correction corner? Because I erroneously stated that nothing could ever be more dramatic than the La La Land / Moonlight fiasco.
You were wrong.
Yeah.
You were wrong. It's been talked about like to death, but I do think we should just bring it up really quick because it was pretty crazy and we just did an Oscars episode. So Will Smith slapped Chris Rock.
What'd you guys take?
I think more celebrities should be slapping each other. I think.
Oh, wow. You know,
slap away.
It's good entertainment. Yeah. You guys are here to entertain us.
And I kind of feel like they don't matter to me on like a personal level. And the way I see it is like he got so mad that Chris Rock made fun of his wife. But in my mind, that's the trade-off for becoming a celebrity. If you're going to get rich and famous and you're going to be like on screens and in the public eye and make like hundreds of millions of dollars, people are allowed to make fun of you.
What about your wife?
I don't care.
Whoa.
If it's like in that way, if it's like at an Oscar show where people get roasted and that's just kind of what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'd be mad. I'd probably be mad. And like maybe later if I ran into Chris Rock, I'd be like, hey, man, stop making fun of my wife. But like, I don't care that they got made fun of, and I also don't care that he went up and slapped Chris Rock.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter to me. It was great entertainment. And I get that like some people are traumatized because they had like violence growing up and everything, and I don't have that background, so I can't understand how that feels, and that sucks. But in my mind, a comedian got slapped for going over the line, you know?
I felt that same way. I was pretty excited when I first heard about it
because
I was like, oh, wow, Will Smith really like putting the bad boy's money where his mouth is. But when the detail came out that he was laughing at the joke at first, And then, like, he saw his wife got mad, and then it was just a little weird. That detail to me kind of fudged it up, for me at least. And I don't know. Should say, like, a blanket statement, tooth and claw, we are not pro battery and assault, because that's what it was at the end of the day. But I don't know. It was just a really interesting and entertaining moment that we haven't ever seen before and probably won't ever see anything like that again. It's crazy.
I think he was just embarrassed that he was caught laughing at such a stupid joke that's been used way too many times.
This is a bad joke.
I'm glad they didn't kick him out, is my biggest take, because it's probably, like, he's been in our lives as an actor for so long, and, like, he has a great career as an actor, and it would have just been so crazy if he was kicked out of the Oscars the night he won Best Actor.
Did you see that he resigned?
What would have even happened?
Yeah, I don't know. He resigned from the Academy.
I don't even know what that
means. That means he can't, like, vote anymore, or, like...
He doesn't get screeners, I don't think.
Yeah, he's, like...
No more Coke-filled orgy parties.
Probably doesn't get the $140,000 gift bag they give everyone. I agree with you, Mike. Like, we don't support assault on this podcast at all. But at the same time, like, if I'm walking down the street and I see a dude slap another dude in that manner, which I don't know if I've ever seen, I wouldn't be like, oh, that dude needs to go to jail. Or, you know, whatever. I'd just be like, whoa, that guy's pissed, you know? And I've been punched a bunch of times. I know how it feels. It's not fun, but it's also just like, that happens sometimes. And I don't know. I think it was very entertaining.
I think people can say things where they deserve a slap like that.
Totally.
Sure.
Yeah.
It was honestly the worst jokes ever, and then they he's like the highlight of the Oscars.
It truly is probably going to be like the best thing that ever happened to his career.
His shows are sold out right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, all he has to do is mention this and people are going to, like, give him a standing ovation.
I was reading a Reddit thread that was like, assuming Chris Rock wants to, like, go into what happened, what should his opening joke be?
Uh-huh.
And my favorite was he just walks out in a neck brace.
That would be great.
My favorite part of the whole thing were the celebrities that were just, like, really going hard on it. Like Judd Apatow saying that he could have killed him. Or like Jim Carrey saying he would have sued him for $200 million. These people, they're so on a different planet. And that's why it didn't matter to me. I was just like, they're both going home to hundreds of millions of dollars. They're both going to probably make more from this. It doesn't matter.
I think it hurts Will. I think it helps Chris.
I don't know if it will hurt him. In the long run, I think it just serves to make him more famous. But maybe it will. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah.
But to me, it was just, like, very entertaining. And I'm sorry if it traumatized people. That sucks. And, like, I don't want that to happen to anyone. But in my, like, personal opinion, I was just like, well, this is great.
Yeah.
Finally, there's something interesting.
People might think we're getting, like, sidetracked here, but this is an attack podcast, you know, so.
It was truly the most boring Oscars I've ever watched up until that point, so.
So thanks, Will.
You were watching it live?
Yeah. It was weird because they bleeped out, like, some of him swearing and stuff. So I thought it was just, like, a bit or something. And then when I watched the video and him saying, like, keep my wife's name out your f***ing mouth, I was like, oh, he's pissed. Like, you could see his eyes, like, he was mad. And I was like, okay, this is real. All right, it's been talked about, like, ad nauseum for a week now.
But
so
now you have our take.
You got our
and
take.
And I think it'll be a different take than what you've been hearing most of the time.
Yeah. I don't know. I read plenty of people that were just like, this doesn't matter. Daniel Radcliffe had my favorite response to it. He was like, I'm so bored by this that for me to add my take would just add to the boredom. And it's like, wow, okay. All right, well, anything else we want to talk about?
Some animal attacks.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, probably some animal attacks from the news.
Yeah, all right. We can do that. So it is our fourth episode. Every fourth episode, we do our news roundup. And we
is that how that works?
Yeah, that's how Jeff's just now catching on. It's kind of a thing that we created because so many people would send us stories and there's stuff happening in the news that we noticed too. And, like, we didn't want to every episode be, like, interjecting those little stories because it kind of gets us off track. I mean, we just talked about Will Smith and Chris Rock for like 10 minutes. We get off track pretty easily. So we just decided that we would kind of compile all those stories into one episode every like 4 episodes. And that's what we're doing today. So some of these stories are from like a few months ago, but they're still relevant in our minds. So we're still talking about them, right?
Yep. Every day. Just can't stop talking about these attacks.
Well, maybe I'll go first because there's one that I think since our last news episode probably got sent to us the most. And I kind of wanted to start with that one. Do you guys mind?
Yes.
Jeff minds. Okay. Jeff, you can go first.
Nah, I'll let you.
No, I'll go first. So I'm going to talk about Hank the Tank, finally.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Hank the Tank.
Such a good name.
It is a good name.
I don't know. I disagree. We're getting off
track. It's low-hanging fruit. But yeah.
Anyone named Hank or Frank is just going to be called the Tank, and I think they probably are tired of it.
Only if they're huge.
Yeah.
I don't think that even matters. I actually don't.
I don't think his name was Hank, and then they called him Hank the Tank when he got big, though. I think it was Hank the Tank from the beginning.
There you go.
So if you don't know about Hank the Tank, since last summer, a 500-pound bear has been breaking into homes in the Tahoe Keys area of Lake Tahoe, and he's breaking into homes to get food. And sometimes,
hold on. Let me say why that's like crazy, though. It's a 500-pound black bear.
Black bear,
which,
yeah.
Doesn't normally happen, right?
No. So average weight for a black bear in the western U.S. is somewhere between like 150 and 300 pounds. When me and Jeff were working with desert black bears in Utah, our biggest bear was about 300 pounds. But average for us was like low 100s. So a 500-pound black bear is a very big black bear. And we're going to talk about that a little bit. But he would go into people's homes. He would sometimes eat food straight out of the refrigerator or out of their pantries. And no one had been able to deter Hank. So this guy for California Fish and Wildlife, Peter Tira, he said that they had tried to haze the bear with paintballs, with beanbags, with sirens, with tasers. But he was so keyed in on human food that any of these hazing operations didn't stop him. They would like sometimes immediately stop him, but sooner or later, you know, within a day or two, he's back on it. So as of late February, when this story kind of hit the news and everyone learned about Hank, residents had called police over 100 times about Hank causing trouble, and he had broken into 28 different homes. He used his really big size to break through garage doors, through windows, and just through normal doors too. And he was given the name Hank the Tank by local residents.
It's got to be a world record.
That's got to be up there.
For bears.
It's also, yeah, bear world record. Do you think they have their own little Guinness Book of World Records?
They should.
Yeah. Most honey.
That one polar bear that swam all that way.
Yeah. So it's also thought that Hank didn't hibernate at all this winter because he was getting so much good food he didn't really need to. And we've talked about this before, that hibernation is a evolution thing in bears, that they've evolved to hibernate because they lose their food sources during the winter. And if bears that live in places where they have food throughout the winter, if they live in those kind of places, they often don't need to hibernate, because like, why hibernate if there's still food available? So that's the case with Hank. They think he probably didn't den or hibernate just because there's still plenty of food. All right, so they tried to trap Hank. They didn't have any luck trapping him. And then they actually started to talk about euthanasia, about removing him.
Oh.
And that met a lot of resistance from the community, because a lot of people saw Hank as somewhat of a local hero. And when they had this trap out, people even spray painted
hero?
Bear killer on the trap. Yeah, like they loved him.
Okay.
They spray painted what?
Bear killer on the trap. Because like they thought they were trying to trap him and kill him. Mm. And that leads me to believe that had they actually trapped him, someone 100% would have let him out, which happens. Don't ever do that. Don't ever open a bear trap, because sometimes they come out
there's
of there pretty angry.
There.
Yeah, exactly. So they talked about other options. They talked about relocation. They talked about taking him to a sanctuary. But I wanted to talk about those other options really quick. If you have a bear that's that food conditioned, relocating them is just moving the problem. So unless you can find a spot where there's no way that bear is going to be able to get back to a community, it's going to find another community and it's going to repeat those same behaviors in that new community, unless that community is like totally bear proof. So relocation for a food conditioned bear can work, but it usually doesn't. You're usually just moving the problem. As far as taking him to a sanctuary, he's a black bear. There's 800,000 black bears in the country. They're not a really like high value animal for sanctuaries or zoos because they are so common and there are so many of them that get into trouble. So it's really hard to find a good sanctuary or zoo or wildlife rehabilitation center or whatever for these kind of bears. And it's not one that you could also like rehabilitate and then release, because in a rehabilitation center or whatever, they're going to be feeding it and it's just going to keep those same behaviors. So they had all these different options. They were talking about killing Hank when this thing came up that Hank was spared because they found DNA in these different homes where he had been breaking and entering. And they ran the DNA.
They looked at DNA of bears?
Yeah, they ran the DNA and they found out that it was actually three bears instead of one. And what? If you will see, especially in places like Tahoe, the bears there, they vary in appearance, but they do kind of all have a very similar appearance. Like they kind of, a lot of the bears in Tahoe are kind of this dark chocolatey brown. They're pretty big. And so they just probably had three massive bears that looked really similar and Whoa. People couldn't tell them apart. And they all thought that it was Hank. So they were like, oh, okay, we can't kill Hank because there's actually three bears and we don't know which one is Hank. But in my mind, it's like, well, now you've got three bears that are breaking into people's homes.
Yeah.
You have
yeah.
three times the problem you thought you had.
You got to strike them from the bear and book of world records, too.
Yeah, exactly.
In their mind, it was like, we don't have a problem anymore.
I just don't think they thought they could target Hank and kill Hank now, because they weren't sure he was responsible for like all of those incidents.
They were set on getting Hank.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm going to talk about that decision whether or not to kill a bear in a second. But in my mind, a threshold had kind of been crossed in this instance. And we're going to talk about that a bit. There's this organization in Tahoe called Bear League. It's run by this woman, Ann Bryant, and they're a nonprofit, but they're permitted to like manage a lot of the bear incidents in Tahoe. And some of these people that reported on this interviewed her, and she said the following. She said, "He just sits there and eats. He doesn't attack them. He doesn't growl. He doesn't make rude faces." So she was like trying to defend Hank by saying those things. And that's a little concerning to me, because I don't think the bar for like a management decision should be whether or not the bear is attacking someone in their home.
Making
rude faces at him. Yeah. Like, in my opinion, breaking down a door to get into someone's home is reason enough to take action. And I wanted to bring up Night of the Grizzlies. I know it's a completely different species with completely different behavior. But remember, in that story, they knew about these problems. They knew about these bears that were food conditioned. And they had the same kind of excuses. They were like, well, they haven't attacked anyone. They haven't hurt anyone. And then they did. And then it was like, shoot, we should have done something. And another thing I wanted to bring up is like, we did a news episode not long ago in the fall where we talked about a woman in Tahoe where a bear broke into her house, was in her refrigerator, and then mauled her when she came down to check it out. If you guys remember, she was like recovering from cancer.
Yeah.
And the bear ripped the shit out of her. Like, she got mauled pretty badly. So it's not like these bears don't ever attack people or hurt people. They're still bears. They still can. I just think it's important that we talk about this a little bit more, and I want to talk about food conditioning a little bit more and the difference between habituation and food conditioning. So, Jeff, do you know the difference between the two?
Well, I guess I don't know habituation that well, because I know food conditioning is just them getting accustomed to eating human food.
Yeah, so habituation is more when a bear becomes used to human presence. So like in Yellowstone, we have bears that will hang out on the roadways and they're not scared of people stopping their cars and taking photos or anything anymore. And that's habituation. Like, the bears have become used to our presence. We don't necessarily scare them anymore, but they're still more or less acting like wild bears. They're eating wild food sources and they're doing wild things, but they're a little bit more used to our presence. That's habituation. It's kind of a gray area in bear management and bear science. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It's kind of a scary thing. We're not really sure how to feel about it yet. Food conditioning, on the other hand, is almost always a negative thing. And that's where bears get really used to eating human food, anthropogenic food. So like not just trash and donuts and stuff, but also like bird feeders or chickens or anything that is something that we put out in their environment and they eat. So when a bear becomes food conditioned, it starts to take really big risks because the rewards outweigh the risks. And that bear is going to stop acting like a bear does in the wild. And it's going to start doing whatever it needs to do to get that kind of food. And that can be charging people, it can be attacking people, it can be destroying property. They just start acting like bears don't typically act, and they become much more unpredictable. So it's not a good place for a bear.
I was going to ask, in the case of like Hank the Tank, why don't they just fly him out to like the middle of nowhere and just like leave him there? But if they're food conditioned, would that mean like basically you're consigning them to death?
Not necessarily. I mean, if it was like a cub that was raised getting human food and then as an adult it got human food, yes, that would probably happen. But if it's a bear that just recently made the switch, then it'll be fine once you release it somewhere. But to your point, in the lower 48, the furthest somewhere is from a road is like 25 miles. Like, we don't have true wilderness anymore. A bear can cover that distance in like a day. So even if you dropped him in the middle of the Sierra Nevadas, he could find a community pretty quickly. I'm not saying he would, but he could. And again, like, the other thing with that is like, there's so many black bears. Is it worth the tens of thousands of dollars or maybe even more to like fly him out, you know? And that's more of a moral discussion than anything. But something else I wanted to say is this food conditioning thing, the thing that people don't really think about is that it presents a really big liability for wildlife agencies and organizations. Because if they have a bear that they know is a problem bear and that bear ends up hurting or killing someone, those people, like the family of those people or that person, can sue the agency. And that ultimately takes funds away from that agency that they would be using to protect and manage wildlife. So it's a really bad deal. And it's like something they have to remember, that they have a huge liability when they leave those animals out in the landscape. And then, like, in my opinion, I just don't think bears belong in trash cans and like in our alleyways and stuff. It kind of makes them stop being bears to me. To me, when I see a bear out in the wild, like if I'm out fishing and I see a bear or something, it's a very different experience than when you're like driving through downtown Tahoe and you see one rooting through a dumpster. It's just like, it's not the same.
Yeah.
So
the thrill is gone.
Yeah. So I read a comment. There's a Facebook post by the police in Tahoe and they're talking about Hank. And this is a comment from one of the residents. Please stop considering euthanizing Hank the Tank. He's made national news. And although a nuisance and rabble-rouser for his human neighbors, he's already got a huge supportive fan base across the country. Save Hank. So this is also kind of a new phenomenon where these bears become celebrities because the news reports on them. And then they have this national fan base that's supporting them. And that also really influences decisions when you're talking about maybe removing them. In my mind, the thing that needs to be done in Tahoe, because this is a continuing problem for them, is they need to bear-proof their community. Like, every single resident needs to have a bear box that's bear-proof. They need to have penalties for people that are leaving their trash out overnight or bird feeders or whatever kind of attractants. And they just need to be a lot more on top of bear-proofing, because that stops these kind of things from ever happening in the first place. But, and this might not be a popular opinion, my personal opinion is that if you have bears that are breaking into dozens of homes, you have to remove that bear. And it's like, I know people don't love that opinion. And I know, like, I love bears more than honestly probably 99.9% of the people in this world. Probably more than that. But like, I...
Just people who take it too far.
I would hate to ever have to kill a bear. So far, I haven't had to. But like, I think these residents are ultimately responsible for this. But if this bear were to kill someone, it would be really bad for every other bear in that population.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, if you have to kill three bears, I keep saying this bear, but it really was three bears. If you have to kill three bears, that's tragic and terrible, especially because they're so beloved by the community. But it's much better than everyone hating bears in that entire community and the wildlife agencies not having money to manage the population. So I think you got to remove them.
Wes.
Yeah.
Why don't they just put human food up in the trees where the bears should be, and then the bears will just have the food up in the trees?
So I know you think that's like kind of a silly question, but they actually did that in Tahoe. They had a year where there was like very little natural food, and they started placing supplementary food sources out in the woods for bears to get. It was mostly apples, I believe. And that for me is like another gray area. I'm not totally against that. And I do think we've altered their landscape so much that sometimes we need to help them out. But You got to do that before they become food conditioned, not after.
Just like where Walter White throws the pizza on his garage, just start doing that to other trees.
Yeah. Anyway, that's the story of Hank. I think it's a really nuanced one, even though it doesn't seem like it maybe to a lot of people. It's not, I don't love taking that position that I hate any time I feel like a bear probably needs to die, because it's always the people's fault. It's not the bear's fault. But in this case, I do kind of think that's the only outcome here. But we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how it develops.
And it's not like the people are acting maliciously. It's just out of ignorance. They're like, hey, bears are cool. It's fun that we have a nice one, a seemingly nice one in the community. And they just kind of let things spiral a little bit too far out of control. And it just seems like it's going to ultimately, it will end badly for one party or the other. You know, like,
yeah,
we can't wait for that to happen. I don't know. I'm not a bear expert, but I agree with you. No,
what you said is true. But like, as far as like them not being malicious, you're right. But it is a little ignorant, because it's like, you live in bear country. You need to protect your attractants. Like, you can't leave your trash out overnight. You can't allow a bear to get into that, because then they start breaking down doors and stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And then you can't stop it.
No, they love kicking in doors.
If Hank and these other bears had never gotten that reward in the first place, then they would never think about breaking down someone's door, because they're still afraid of us, and our food still isn't worth that risk to them. But once they realize it is, then it's like, fine, I'll break this window, you know, whatever. I want some food.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've rattled on about this.
Hank. Have you ever kicked a door in, Jeff?
No, I've tried.
It'd be pretty cool. If you learned you could do it, you'd want to do it again.
It's not like the movies. Yeah, you got to go like by the door handle, I think, is where you're supposed to.
Isn't that Jumanji taught us that, right?
I don't know.
Really?
I don't know where I learned that one.
All right, well, that's it for Hank the Tank. Who's up next?
I'll go. Should I do a short one or a long one?
Whatever you want, dude.
Okay, I'll start with a short one, and then I have a longer one coming up.
Cool.
Okay.
Okay, so this one happened in Florida, and John Hopkins had just started a new job.
Ooh, the famous doctor.
He's 59.
I know him.
Yeah.
A new job, wow. Career shift.
And he was 1 mile away from home when he hit an 11-foot alligator in the road.
In
causing
his car?
Him to veer off the road. Okay. Yeah, in his car.
All right. It's an important detail.
Yeah, so it caused him to veer off the road, the car flipped, and he ended up dying along with the alligator.
Oh, jeez. Oh, they both died?
Yeah.
Wow.
So I guess the road's pretty dark at night, and, like, you just don't expect... You're like, I'm sure, like, you look for deer and stuff, but you don't ever really look that low for, like, an alligator.
Yeah. 11-foot alligator is a big alligator. Like, you would notice it.
And honestly, there wasn't a lot more to the story than that, but I did see, this is a random stat, kind of goes with it, 185 people died in car crashes involving an animal in 2019 in America. So this one doesn't count towards that, but...
That's actually less than I would have thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Read that number again.
185.
Oh.
That's really it?
That seems low, but I don't...
That seems very low. I would have thought like a couple thousand. But I believe that's what you
said. I was watching someone on the Florida news who said that.
Okay.
So that's my source.
Okay. I was driving in New Orleans once, and I saw an alligator in the road nearby New Orleans.
Mm.
And they're pretty noticeable. Like, you see them. It looks like a big log laying in the road. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I want to ask what your guys' like scariest incident in a car was.
Mine is that cow in Mexico. I was driving in Baja, Mexico, probably doing like 65, and the roads there are really narrow and dark, and I rounded a corner and there's a whole herd of cows in the road, and I had to like swerve, and I just missed it by like inches.
Yeah.
It was so scary. I think about it all the time.
Mike?
So my sister told me that there might be a spider egg and a bunch of little spiders running around my car, because she saw like two spiders once, and I made fun of her at first, but I couldn't stop thinking about it for a long time after that. Just worried about spiders crawling around.
What's yours, Jeff?
My cousin Brent fell asleep while we were driving, and he always drives all over the road, so he was like kind of driving towards the guardrail, and like I didn't say anything because that's what he always does. And then he starts getting like super close to it. I'm like, whoa. And then we're about to hit it. I'm like, whoa! And he wakes up and just fishtails the truck. And like, we're going to drive off the road towards the river. And then he fishtails it the other way. And just like, fishtails it 5 different directions until we like skidded to a stop. But that was pretty
so
that
scary. One,
it woke him up, though.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, Mike, you got a story for us?
I do. This is a kangaroo attack that happened in Australia, of course, since that's really the only place kangaroos live. Right, Wes?
It is. Yeah.
So this was in New South Wales, and it was a 3-year-old.
I got some kangaroos coming up that aren't Australia.
All right. Well, they're from Australia, but maybe they don't live in Australia anymore.
Okay. Should we just skip right to yours then? Because yours sounds pretty good.
This is just a teaser.
Okay,
dude.
So mine happens on the back porch of a family house where a 3-year-old toddler, a little girl, there aren't exactly like a ton of details about what the kangaroo
hey,
did
Mike,
to this girl.
Another teaser. I got a story with a 3-year-old girl coming up. So just so you know.
My story is redundant before any of them have even been told. Anyway, this kangaroo messes up the little girl and she ends up having to get airlifted to a nearby hospital. And
wait, how's it mess her up? Yeah.
I think
we need some more details there.
There aren't like, what does a kangaroo do? Does it just like jump on you or does it bite?
They kick, and they have claws. That's their main thing.
They can box.
They can also
right?
grab onto you. Or they can grab onto you with their arms. And they can claw you up pretty good there, too.
Suplex.
But mostly it's their feet. Their feet are their main weapon.
Right.
Headbutt.
So probably a combination of those things. Are you guys satisfied?
Okay. No, but go ahead.
So this 3-year-old little girl maybe got put in a headlock, scratched up. There were severe lacerations to the head, the back, and one of her arms, it says. And there's a guy, his name is Ian Temby, he's been working for the Department of Environment, Land, Water, and Planning for like 30 years. He said, and this is just kind of like general advice as to what to do in the event of a kangaroo encounter. He said, if you're standing up, the kangaroo can kick you with its hind feet, and that can pretty much rip you open. It's extremely dangerous, he said. And it kind of made me rethink the clips of, you know, when you see a kangaroo lean back and like kick with its feet.
Yeah.
It like kind of looks a little comical almost even, but it made me recontextualize just how dangerous that can be if like, you know, they must have
they
some
can
pretty
eviscerate
gnarly claws.
You. Yeah. We're going to do a kangaroo episode soon.
Cool.
And they're pretty gnarly.
He said, he added, what you were supposed to do, what you should do is crouch down, back away, get away, get a bush or a tree or something else in between you and the kangaroo. They typically don't chase you too far. So anyone out there who may or may not be getting into it with a kangaroo, that's what you should be doing. And this actually occurred, a little bonus kangaroo. I don't know if you can call it an attack. It's a kangaroo story, but a teenage Australian girl was riding on her dirt bike about a week before this attack took place. All of a sudden, a kangaroo jumped at the front wheel of the dirt bike and just like totally cleared her off the bike. And she had to spend quite a while in the hospital recovering from the wounds from that little encounter. But she credits the protective gear she was wearing that it wasn't a lot worse. So if you're ever in Australia, just
here's to protective
strap
gear.
On a helmet. That's the official tooth and claw advice.
Just wear a helmet wherever you go. All right. Well, thanks, Mike. Yeah, we're definitely going to do a full kangaroo episode soon because I feel like we're missing that. All right, so my next one is also an Australia attack. It's a shark attack. We mentioned it in our last Great White episode, but I think we need to get a little bit more into detail on it. Unfortunately, a fatal attack. It happened in February. It's the first fatal attack that's happened in Sydney in the last 60 years, and it happened near Little Bay, which is a really popular beach for residents of Sydney. So the victim was Simon Nellist. He was a 35-year-old diving instructor. He'd grown up in the UK. He was in the military. He did 2 tours of duty in Afghanistan for the British military. And then he visited Australia, and he fell in love with the country and the country's wildlife. And he moved there with his fiance, Jessie Ho. They were planning on getting married in 2020. The pandemic ruined their plans. Apparently, they were only weeks away from getting married when he was tragically killed by this shark. Which is pretty terrible.
Yeah.
The attack happened off Buchan Point.
I feel like that's better than like a week after you're married, though.
Yeah, I think that's, probably.
Maybe,
I don't know. Yeah, because then you have to,
Can't say that.
Yeah, maybe not. I think from like a legal standpoint, it probably would have been a lot better had they been married.
I think it's bad.
I don't regardless. Know. Anyways, it happened off of Buchan Point, which is this like popular fishing area near this beach. And a great white shark attacked him from underneath while he was off swimming in a wetsuit. It completely breached out of the water, and then it slapped back down into the water with him in his jaws. Several eyewitnesses witnessed the entire breach. They said it looked like a car coming out of the water and then slapping back down into the water, which is kind of interesting that I feel like our frame of reference is always just like, it's a car.
Yeah.
Like anything big is just a car. And it's like, well, it's also a great white shark. It looked like a great white shark shooting out of the water. So there's also a fisherman fishing off that point, and he saw the shark then pull Simon underwater. And then the shark began to thrash around and splash side to side, and the water turns red. And another fisherman actually recorded a video of that part. And that video is available. So
did you watch it?
I did watch it. It's grainy. You can't really make out too much, but you can see clearly like a red spot in the water and the shark thrashing around. It's pretty, it made my stomach turn. Like, I don't like watching those kind of videos where someone dies because it's just it's too much. It's too personal. It's like too big of a thing. But I did feel like I needed to watch it just to have some more context, and it made me feel pretty gross.
Yeah.
So the eyewitnesses also described the shark returning. It ate pieces of him. And then when the authorities finally responded in a boat, there wasn't hardly anything left of him. What that makes me think is that this was probably a predatory attack, which we've talked about again are really rare. But when they do happen, the victim usually dies, and there's usually not much left of them because the shark consumes the victim's body. So my guess is that this was a really rare great white predatory attack. It wasn't just an exploratory bite from what they describe, like it breaching. So it definitely like attacked him thinking he was food, and then it continued to feed on him, which makes me think like, okay, it was predatory. Could have been mistaken identity, then it just continued to eat him, but who knows? It could have been influenced by the fishing activity nearby, like if they had lost a bunch of bait or something, that can kind of get a shark excited thinking that there's prey around. And then there's also a good possibility that this was a juvenile shark that maybe just hadn't totally figured out what its prey was yet, and it was investigating a new prey source, because they describe it as being about 4 meters long, which is 4 to 5 meters long, they said, which is like probably somewhere around 12 to 15 feet long. So it's not like a massive, it's big still, but it's not like as big as they get. So some people blame the fisherman, some people even blame the victim, but I just think it's really important to remember that if you're spending time in the ocean where great white sharks are commonly found, there's a chance that you're going to run into a shark at some point. And he swam in this spot almost every day. He was training for a swimming competition. He was there all the time. He'd probably swam in those exact same conditions 20 times already. And he just got lucky or unlucky. He just ran into a shark one day, and unfortunately, it was a really rare type of great white, and he paid for it with his life. And I don't think there's anyone to blame in this instance. It's just a really unfortunate, tragic circumstance.
Yeah.
So
if I ever get hit by a car, just like walking, I'm gonna say it's like a shark came and hit me.
Yeah. It's like a huge gray white hit me when you're describing it to people. That's perfect.
When I'm describing a car, I'm going to just use the great white shark for now.
It was like two vending machines stacked on top of each other.
I mean, Jet, you always compare everything to a bus, so you have no room to talk.
So I'd be like, it was like a mini, mini bus.
It's like that. So you think you should, or so I think you should leave skit where he thinks everything are the motorcycles.
Yeah. It's like a little house motorcycle.
Yeah. So a couple things, just a quick reminder. We just did a great white episode, so I'm not going to get too in the weeds with this. But a few things to pay attention to if you are recreating and you're going to the ocean in a place where great whites are found. Pay attention to the water conditions. If it's murky water, it's more likely that you could run into a shark. Pay attention to any kind of warning signs that might be on the beach. When sharks have been spotted, they almost always put up some kind of signage. Look for any potential food sources in the water, like if there's a dead whale nearby or sea lions or fish. And then finally, pay attention to the other marine life that's active in the area, because as we talked about in our last great white episode, seeing dolphins or sea lions or all these different animals, means that there's activity in the water, and it's more likely that there could be a shark too. It doesn't mean there's going to be one, but you just need to pay attention to those things. Just so you're going into that with open eyes. That's all I got about the shark attack.
Okay. So this one's going to, I think, make you guys feel a lot of different emotions.
All right.
You're going to feel angry, sad, maybe some hope, maybe some admiration.
Okay.
What other feelings?
It's just like the Oscar slap. Yeah. We're going to feel all those emotions.
You guys got, what other feelings are there?
Horny?
That's the big one you were missing.
I hope it doesn't do that to you. I don't know exactly how to say the town's name, but it's in Ukraine.
Okay.
The Kharkiv Zoo is the oldest zoo in all of Ukraine, and it's been struggling to keep its animals safe during the Russian invasion right now. And actually, two volunteers have already been killed. They were like breaking into the zoo every 3 days to feed animals. And they were targeted with shells and machine gun fire. And there's been a few other Ukrainians who have gone into the zoo to feed animals who have reported shelling. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like in the middle of stuff. And it kind of sounds like people are being targeted when they go in there, which is like super messed up. So this is from the zoo, and it was posted on their Instagram and Facebook. But it says, "We work daily to evacuate our animals from the territory of the eco park, but alas, we cannot avoid tragedies. And in order for the mournful list to no longer expand, we must take out all the animals, without exception. We will not be able to do this without your help. Your donations can be sent in any convenient way at feldmanecopark.com/donation. So they're asking for donations if you guys are interested, but they're right now just trying to get these animals out of the zoo, which is like something I didn't really consider at all until like I saw these articles.
Yeah, and they didn't really have like a ton of warning to get them all out or anything too.
Yeah, so they're like bringing animals to their homes and like taking care of them and stuff. Yeah. It says from Facebook, they've managed to take out a few more animals. They saved some monkeys and a young lion, and they wanted to take out more, but they were under constant bombing and shelling, and they said all the its animals are in mortal danger. What I've been telling you has like a lot of sources. This one was just from one source, and let me tell you what it is. It's from AP News. So there's like this full-grown lion, Simba the lion, and then a gray wolf, Akela. And some people from the UK, they were like part of an animal rights group, and they heard about the zoos and how they needed help. And they drove into Ukraine and went to the zoo and like put this lion and wolf in cages in the back of a van and like had no sedatives. And I guess the cages were pretty questionable.
Janky. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so then they like were driving this lion and wolf in the back of a car and drove it to the border of Romania. And then the guards wouldn't let them through. So then they had to go back into Ukraine and drive like 660 miles over this mountain range to get across a border. And now the lion's going to be moved to a sanctuary.
Huh. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah. So I sent you guys a video, and it's of like a Ukrainian guy.
Ukrainian guy, sorry.
It's a funny video because you just see him talking, and he's like talking in Ukrainian.
Uh-huh.
And then like it pans to the back of what he's driving, and there's just like 10 kangaroos and a couple wallabies in the back of his van.
Yeah, and they're pretty chill in there, too. They're not, like, really reacting at all.
I mean, they're probably happy to be away from the bombings, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of what, like, led me to this deep dive was, like, finding this video of a guy. It's like, oh, wow, like, I guess that is, like, something to consider that these animals are kind of just stranded there. And then the same guy has a video where he's taken, like, 8 giant tortoises and a few monkeys in cages in that same van. And I guess in the translation of the video, he says these tortoises were not easy to move. Yeah. Like they're like 250-pound tortoises.
Do you know who the guy is?
It doesn't say his name. I think it says his name in Ukrainian, but I just
hope he has a good plan for him. you know.
I think he's doing what
he's supposed to do.
Zoo wants him to do.
Good.
They're getting bombed.
I know. It's one of those situations where it's like something is better than nothing. But then at the same time, it's like you don't really want people picking him up just for like internet clout either, you know? I'm not saying, I don't think that's what this guy was doing. I'm just saying like that would be unfortunate if it were the case. But anything is probably better than being in the middle of like a shelling area.
Is there's no one at the zoo to feed him. So right. The animals are starving to death if they don't get him out. So it's not anything like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And they were able to also save 4 orangutans, 9 chimps, 22 alpacas, and 3 rare bear macaque sisters. Macaque? It's like a type of monkey. Saying.
I have no idea. Macaque?
Macaque, yeah.
Macaque or macaque.
I don't know why I said
a lot of people say macaque. I'll probably start saying macaque. Or maybe I'll say macaque or whatever you just said. Bear macaques.
Unfortunately, 2 orangutans have for sure been killed. Mm. And then a bunch of deer have been killed. I guess they've just released a lot of deer and their moose into the wild because they figured you'd have a better chance. But
not the best. Thing to do unless they're native to that area.
I think there's deer and moose. I mean, I guess it depends on the type of deer.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But it just seems like it would be hard to do the very best thing in this situation.
It is.
You know? Like, what's the alternative?
It's a pretty impossible situation. You just don't want to do things that are going to have like implications for generations to come, which like releasing invasives could do that. But like, I don't blame anyone for anything over there with their decisions they're making with the zoo. I'm sure they're just doing whatever they can.
I just want to give credit to the only name I saw translated as Vadim Stoller, who's been working hard to get all these out. But yeah, their Instagram page is up. So you can go to the zoo's Instagram page and there's links to donate if you feel like you want to help try to get some of these animals out.
Okay, great.
It always sucks hearing how animals are just like, they're getting messed up by stupid human behavior.
I know.
And it makes me obviously I'm not talking about attacks here, but when I hear about stories how a bison is just like walking in the middle of the road and cars can't get around it, I'm just kind of like, yeah, good. Put us back in our place for a little bit. Thing. Show us that like you can really ruin our day without really having to even try.
I've been thinking we need to have a segment called Animal Justice where like someone gets hurt by an animal, but they totally deserve it. I agree. It's like we already do so many things to mess up their day-to-day lives between climate change and habitat loss and poaching and all these different things. And then on top of that, our stupid conflicts between ourselves are also messing things up for them. It's just like they can't catch a break. It sucks.
I know, too. I didn't really dive into too many details, but the zoo in Kyiv.
Or there's a bunch of different ways to say it, but Kyiv
has been struggling to keep their animals from being stressed out. And like I know the elephants are getting really stressed out there. Yeah,
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mike, you got something else?
Yeah. So before I get into my next story, I just wanted to mention real quick that we saw a bunch of you submitting the moose attack story up in Alaska that took place right before the Iditarod. And Wes and I were just kind of talking a little bit about it earlier, and we decided there's enough cool little details that we actually want to do a full story on it or something a little more. I just wouldn't be able to do like just how cool of a story it is. I wouldn't be able to do it justice here. So
it'll be part of another moose episode. We've done one moose episode, but it'll be part of another one at some point.
I do just want to say that it ends differently than I would have expected it to, the story.
It's a good teaser.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, so I won't get into any of the details, but like, it's a really, really fascinating story, I think. But my actual next news story, now that I've wasted everyone's time talking about something we're not going to be talking about, is a North Carolina man. This is early March of this year. He loses fingers and almost dies after a venomous viper bite. And that happens sometimes when a venomous snake gets you, you know, it bites you.
Yeah, it can happen.
You can lose your life even.
Uh-huh.
This guy was bitten by a Gaboon viper. I'm saying that right, I think.
Oh, those are so cool.
I know. I was going to say, like, you guys realize how cool those snakes are, right?
That one's a top 3 snake.
Yeah, they have, like, the little horns on their snout. I don't know.
They have the longest... they have the longest fangs of any snake, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Said, like, 2 inches, I think.
Yeah.
And they're like, super long. Move in a straight line. They don't, like,
Yeah, they kind of do this weird
turn.
Yeah, they're neat. they're neat snakes.
So not only do they have the longest fangs, they're also, at least according to this article, and you can fact check me on this, it says that they have the highest venom yield of any venomous snake.
I don't know.
What does that mean?
When you like milk one, if you were to like try and get venom out of one, it's going to give you more volume of venom.
So it's not as potent.
It doesn't mean that it's
some
the most
other
potent
snakes, but it's got a lot
more volume. Yeah.
It also said, and I wanted to ask you if this is normal, Wes, that it can control how much venom it releases during a bite.
Yeah, it's very
cool. Okay.
I can't speak for like every venomous snake because I don't know about all of them, but I think that's most venomous snakes can control the amount of venom that they inject when they bite.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that, but I know it's fairly common.
Well, even if it is common, it's still cool.
It is cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Jeff, you agree?
Well, again, like we've talked about this in other venomous snake episodes, like creating venom for them is really energetically expensive. It's hard for them to create venom, so they don't want to waste it. So if you're a Gaboon viper, you want to give a different dose to like a mouse as you would to like a warthog or something that's threatening you. So it's very different, the amount that they'd want to use, and it's smart that they're able to control it, because otherwise they would constantly just have to produce more venom if they're like shooting their load every time, you know?
That's not the best way to say that. I can control how much spit I spit.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're great, Jeff.
This is not that cool.
No, we've been proud of you for that for a long time.
Yeah. Cool.
I'm just saying, yeah. I'm just saying, maybe it's not as cool as you guys think.
Okay.
In any case, in this situation, this viper decided to shoot its whole load, as it were, Wes. He needed 44 bottles of anti-venom, which is...
Jeez. Oh, wow.
That is a lot.
And we have some quotes from the first responders and some of the paramedics that were dealing with this situation. So the first responders consulted with a doctor who had kind of frequented Africa, kind of, you know, where this snake typically lives. This was in North Carolina again, so it was kind of an exotic import. But they said, this is going to be the worst Gaboon bite that's ever been survived. And then one of the paramedics on the case, his name is Thad Bowman, he told WMBF News that we've dealt with exotic bites in the past, but nothing to this extent. And it's crazy. Jeez. Because this guy, not only did he survive, really the only seemingly lasting damage was he lost a few fingers, but otherwise is living a fairly normal life, which
that's crazy.
Which is great that he made it through. And I didn't see any details about if he was antagonizing the snake or like he caused it by any kind of weird behavior on his part. But
yeah, I can probably speak to that just a little bit. Like, I don't know anything about this story, but the fact that it happened in North Carolina and the fact that it happened on his hand makes me almost positive that he's like a handler, that he's someone who keeps venomous snakes, which some states allow that. You typically have to have a permit, but he probably does. But almost for sure, he was handling this snake when it bit him. For it to happen on his hands and for it to happen in North Carolina. And I'm not saying that's wrong. Maybe he like gets anti-venom from him. Maybe, you know, there's a lot of different reasons to have venomous snakes. But almost for sure, he was holding it or handling it, is my guess.
Yeah. The article did say that Gaboons typically are pretty mild-mannered snakes.
They are.
And
yeah.
Again, we're not passing any judgment just because there aren't details.
No.
But usually in the case of a Gaboon bite, it's the snake was feeling threatened for one reason or another. And that can be any number of reasons. But
yeah.
The guy spent months, he was in the hospital for months on dialysis and doing the physical therapy and rehab and all that. But he made it through. He made it through all right.
Yeah.
And this story just tangentially reminded me of another listener-submitted story that I kind of got to thinking, like, it's really weird. And I'm not passing judgment on anyone that does this, because I think in a lot of cases it's really cool and interesting and many times done for good reasons. But how snakes and other exotic animals that are native to, like, you know, the other side of the planet, how they end up in, you know, some dude with some guy in North Carolina. And yeah. Plenty of very legitimate reasons for that to be the case. But
I have a snake that's native to the other side of the world in my house right now. And like, mine's a ball python. It's like the easiest kind of snake to keep. But I do know in the back of my mind, like, I could get bit by this snake, you know, and it wouldn't, mine's like non-venomous. It would just kind of hurt. But like, you just need to have, if you are keeping any kind of reptile, there's a chance it could bite you. And if it's a venomous snake, there's a chance it could kill you. So yeah. It's just like one of the risks.
I found kind of a story from like the seedy underbelly of the exotic animal trafficking scene, though. One of our lists, again, a listener sent this in to us, but this headline reads that border authorities find 52 reptiles hidden in man's pants.
Oh, wow. So,
that's a lot.
It's impressive.
Were they like little lizards?
Yeah. So I'm just going to read off exactly what it says. So it says the U.S. Customs.
It's like me. It's like me trying to go to a movie with all my snacks.
With all your reptiles.
Basically, a U.S. citizen was trying to smuggle in a bunch of exotic animals through the San Ysidro port of entry down by Tijuana from Mexico back into the United States. And the border officials say that there were a total of 52 bags holding 43 horned lizards and 9 snakes, which were concealed in the man's jacket, pants, and groin area. The live reptiles were placed in a secure and safe area and will remain in quarantine, as some have been identified as endangered. So that's just that's one way that some of these critters make it into the States from overseas or across the border.
Yeah, which isn't cool.
No.
That's pretty brave to be like, you know what? Like, do you think he was at his like friend's house and they were like, he's like has like 12 lizards in his pants and they're like, dude, you're good. And he's like, no, I'm not. No,
keep them coming.
Just kept going. More. I want more. Well, cool. All right. Well, I got a couple more. I got a real quick one that's just pretty much a headline. It is about snakes on a plane. So
exciting. Wow.
An Air Asia flight that was flying from Kuala Lumpur to Tawa, Indonesia, was diverted after a snake was seen in one of its overhead compartments. And there's a little video of this. It's like you can see it crawling through the little light right by the overhead compartment. And they had to like land the plane and fumigate it. And then they couldn't find the snake, but they had to switch planes, I believe. But it's unknown. I looked at the video. It's pretty hard to tell if it was a venomous snake or not. It could have been a type of viper that's in that area and pretty common, or it could have been like a vine snake, which are rear fanged, slightly venomous, but not really bad at all. So it's pretty interesting, though. It was a true snakes on the plane kind of thing.
I can just imagine a flight attendant hopping on the PA and just being like, so, do we have any snake handlers on this flight by any chance?
Is Samuel Jackson here by chance? All right, but my last real story is about, it's a pretty tragic one too, just in that, like what was actually happening in this story, but it's about a mom in Uzbekistan who actually attempted to throw her daughter into a brown bear enclosure in the zoo.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty terrible. So this was the Tashkent Zoo in Uzbekistan. So I actually want to show you guys the video on this one because it's pretty crazy. Or they got this on video of this mom trying to throw her daughter to this bear. This is the mom right here. She's holding her arms over the railing and her daughter's standing
Michael
on
Jackson with his baby.
Yeah, exactly. It looks just like that. But her daughter's like standing on the lip of this wall that goes down into a trench. Her daughter's only 3 years old, so this woman's holding her daughter over the railing onto this lip, and the bear is just pacing back and forth in front of them. Now I'm going to let you guys watch the video.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's pretty obvious what she was doing.
Yeah. So she chucks her daughter in there, and the bear is pretty into it. And that's pretty much the whole video. So I'm going to explain it one more time for everyone else. She's holding her daughter over the railing. The bear's pacing back and forth on the edge of this trench, and then suddenly you just see her kind of just let go of her daughter, and her daughter plunges 15 feet down into the trench.
It looks like she fell like head first.
She does.
Yeah.
The daughter's kind of leaning forward, and the mom just lets go of her, so she just falls head first, goes down in this trench, and the bear, which had been pacing back and forth because someone was doing something new in its enclosure, like her putting her daughter on the other side.
It's a grizzly bear, right?
It's a Caucasian brown bear, so it's a grizzly bear, brown bear. It shoots down there and goes to investigate. And luckily for this girl, the bear really just went up and sniffed her and was checking her out. And then the zookeepers had already been like yelling at her, telling her to stop. And so they were ready to go. And they lured the bear into its feeding enclosure. And then they all got in there and rescued the girl. And that only took moments for them to get in there and do that. Apparently, the girl was pretty much uninjured. She had a concussion, some cuts and bruises, but nothing too serious. The woman is facing up to 15 years in prison for attempted murder. In my mind, it should be a lot more than that. That should be a life in prison kind of thing because you're trying to kill your daughter. That's That's for sure. She's trying to kill her. And then also, like, all these people are going to see that. This bear's going to have to kill someone. Like, it's awful. It's just really terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the whole story.
That's bad.
It's pretty wild.
It's a bad parenting technique, in my opinion.
It really it really makes you appreciate our moms.
But you're not a parent yet, so you can't say
that. You can't judge her. I mean, maybe that girl was just like, maybe she wanted to listen to Baby Shark one too many times.
You guys are right.
That's it for me. Do you guys have more?
Yeah. So just because I was like so familiar to last month's news episode, a 50-year-old employee at like a nature park in Florida went into the tiger's enclosure and got mauled by a tiger. And it's like, you guys got to just realize a tiger doesn't want you to pet it, you know? Yeah. Like, they look soft, but don't try to like interact with tigers.
Yeah. I got a quick comment on that one. Echo the tiger, that was in like a Naples zoo. That was in like an AZA accredited great zoo. This one was in like a roadside wildlife place. So like more of kind of like a Joe Exotic kind of thing. And so I'm not saying they don't do a good job with their animals. I don't know anything about this place where he got mauled. But I know that this guy like wasn't supposed to be interacting with the tiger, and he kind of just decided to. And you shouldn't be able to do that in these kind of places. And the thing that we've learned from both of these things is if you try and pet a tiger, it's going to probably maul you. So like, don't try and pet tigers. It's a bad idea.
Yeah.
Just don't ever try and do it, because it might rip your arm off.
And then real quick, I just want to do a small coyotes be wiling. So this one's not an attack, but I just found this really funny company to me that was on Shark Tank apparently, but it's called Coyote Vest.
Wait a minute. We've talked about this.
Have we talked about it?
Yeah, when we were looking up the Sir Barks-a-Lot costume.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, we can't even really remember it, so go ahead and run through it really quick.
Yeah, do it again.
Just real quick, there's like Velcro spikes all over these Kevlar vests, and then there's like these plastic neon porcupine quill things that I guess if you push them too hard, they hurt you. But like, there's all these dogs and like all this Kevlar with spikes. Yeah. And after watching a few videos of coyotes like going into people's yards and taking their little dogs, I just don't think this vest is going to work that well, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, it might help a little bit. The thing that I see on it that seems most effective is like the big plate on their neck that has the big spikes on it, because coyotes do tend to pick their prey up by their neck and run off.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I agree. Like, if the coyote's determined enough, it would still be able to kill these dogs. But I could see it working, like, short term, at least allowing the owner enough time to go and respond.
That's a good point. There's also a hawk vest that they have on there for protecting little dogs against hawks. Yeah. But I think you're right, Mike. This is the second time we brought him up, but you know, we're just trying really hard to get a sponsor. So if you were a coyote vest, reach out to us.
Well, that's our news roundup. I think we got through a lot today. Some of them pretty sad, some of them pretty funny. But we really appreciate everyone that sends us all these stories and whatnot. Don't stop. Just because you think maybe someone else has sent it to us, go ahead and send it to us, and we'll definitely let you know if we've seen it or not. And
that's how Mike gets all his stories.
It really is,
He just pulls them from listeners.
Thanks, guys and gals.
Anything else that we need to talk about?
Well, I have listener questions.
Okay, let's do a few listener questions. That sounds fun.
Okay. All right. From Patreon, from Luke Ellis, could you guys rank your favorite Star Wars movies worst to best?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. You want me to go first?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going to say Empire Strikes Back, number one.
Worst to best, he said.
Oh, worst to best?
So that's your least favorite?
Oh, no, sorry.
What a terrible pick.
My worst one.
Mike, you go.
Oh, shoot. My worst one is probably Attack of the Clones, but I don't hate Attack. I don't hate any of these movies. I want to make that clear. I don't hate any of the Star Wars movies. And then the most recent one, the Skywalker one, and then probably Force Awakens, and then Phantom Menace, Attack of the Sith, whatever the second most recent one was called.
Last Jedi?
And then...
Is that what it
was? No.
Or that? Okay.
The one that Rian Johnson directed. I liked that one.
I think that's what it's called, but...
Whatever. Okay, Last Jedi. I think you're right. And then No, Last Jedi was the third of like the originals.
That's
wasn't it? Return no, that's of Return Jedi. Of the Jedi. Yeah. Sorry, Return of the Jedi, and then Force Awakens. No, what's the first one? New Hope. Then New Hope. Then Rogue One. Then Empire Strikes Back. It's really hard to do it worst to best.
It's like doing the alphabet backwards.
It is.
Yeah.
Good job. I'm glad you did it, and now me and Mike can just kind of like say our differences on it and not list it all.
Yeah.
But Empire Strikes Back, I think, has one of the best like scores of all time.
Yeah.
Like the score of that movie is
for sure
like top five score for me all time. Super good. My favorite's probably Rogue One.
Rogue One's so good. Just start to finish, it's good.
And then my least favorite's the newest one, the Last Jedi.
Yeah,
is that what
that's
it is?
Probably my least favorite too. It's just the like Return of Skywalker
back, like he just kind of negates everything that happened before, and like I just don't like when new movies kind of changed the originals for me.
It was lazy.
And the fact that like the Empire comes back in like 50 years, it's like, okay, so everything Luke did doesn't even really matter because
and like the big
no
threat
one died.
The big threat's like a million Star Destroyers. It's just like all of a sudden they're like, what should we do? I don't know, a million Star Destroyers.
Yeah.
And then how should we beat them? I don't know, have every ship in the universe show up. That's how we'll beat them. It's just lazy. It's lazy screenwriting.
Yeah, let's bring back Lando.
Yeah,
that'd be fun.
Sure, why not?
He'll save everyone. Yeah. Mike, you got any thoughts?
I do. I have a lot of thoughts.
Oh,
so
he does.
It was a really a cold, sobering day when I realized that I didn't really care about Star Wars anymore, and I actually haven't even seen the latest Star Wars movie, whatever it was called, like the last of this newest trilogy.
Something Skywalker, Return of Skywalker.
Something
I can't
like
remember.
That. Rise of Skywalker. Haven't even seen it.
Yeah, Rise of Skywalker.
This newest trilogy, I'm pretty indifferent about. Like, I can take it or leave it. I don't hate or love it. I don't really like it or dislike it even. It's just there.
Yeah.
The prequel trilogy, I think, is like some of the worst movies ever to be made when like taking into consideration the hype and the budget and the source material. I think they're disappointing on levels that it's rarefied air that movies are in this category of bad.
We should marathon.
Good Lord.
We should.
Phantom Menace is like easily the stupidest. I don't,
yeah, like, you hate like Darth Maul and
good
stuff
grief.
Too, though, too.
It's not even Darth Maul, I think, is like a weak character. I think everything about Phantom Menace was dealt with poorly. Like, not like
I felt like space politics.
Yeah, for like it. Oh my gosh. The opening scene where it's just like two Jedis, let's solve this trade dispute. Yeah, that'll get the kids going in the theater.
Unbelievable. I felt that
These
way too.
Terrible.
When I watched Clone Wars, though, like the entire Clone Wars series, and then I started viewing the prequels as like a compendium to Clone Wars almost, I enjoyed them. But I get what you're saying. It's fine.
Awful.
We could talk.
Awful
we could
movies.
We could do a whole podcast.
I'm so
about
sick
this.
Of this new movement of people like pretending that the prequels are actually kind of good now.
Yeah,
they're not. They're not
it's
good
revisionist.
Movies. Like let's be
right.
objective again, guys. Please.
There's some good memes from it.
I'm going crazy over here. If you couldn't tell.
Well, I kind of enjoy.
Need
it.
Need to go
I'm
lay
sorry.
Down. It's unbelievable. Start practicing meditation again.
Wait, Mike, give your favorite Star Wars real quick.
Oh, yeah, I should have. So, Empire Strikes Back, New Hope, Rogue One, Return of the Jedi. Those are like
That's probably
my four favorite.
My four favorite.
Really, I think the only four that are worth watching, to be honest. I actually didn't mind Solo. Sorry. Solo was okay.
I like Solo.
All right, here's a really weird question from Bo. And he says, please describe the other host as a type of chair. Like, okay. Example, Mike and Wes pick the type of chair Jeff would be, or what chair encapsulates the essence of Jeff?
Jeff would be, who's that big purple guy at McDonald's?
Grimace?
Grimace. He'd be Grimace chair at the old McDonald's play places.
Ew.
That'd be my pick for him.
Wes would be like an old rocking chair that grandpas smoke their pipes on, I think.
I like that.
Like a handmade...
Mike's a rocking horse.
Come on.
No.
It works
Mike,
as a chair.
Mike, in my opinion, is like a fancy gaming chair.
With like the head thing and everything.
Yeah. But cool. It probably
it's
has
neon
like
neon orange.
It has some anime character like on it.
Hell yeah.
All right. And then a couple from Instagram real quick. So from Art Garcia Drawn Paint.
Oh, he's the one that animated you as a sloth.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
That is fun. Wes, have you ever heard a grizzly or polar bear roar up close? Is it louder than a lion's?
I've never heard them roar. I've heard them do like aggressive vocalization. So I've heard them like huff and hiss and do things like that, but I've never heard them roar. It's pretty rare that they ever roar.
Would it be louder than a lion?
No, it would not. A lion would be louder. You know, I take that back. I have heard them roar. It's not louder than a lion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've heard a lion roar, and that's loud.
Yeah. Yep.
Ansahorn, favorite sports movie training montage?
That's a good question.
It's Rocky IV for me. Yeah.
Rocky IV, where he's like in the snow?
Mm-hmm.
That's a good
I've one. Always loved the montage in Mighty Ducks where Emilio Estevez is teaching one of the kids how to skate and how to stop. And it shows us the scene where there's the cans that they stack up that he has to stop before he hits them, or they'll like knock all the cans over. And I just have to imagine that that's the least efficient way to teach someone, because like in between every time he tries to stop, you have to like, okay, stack up 100 cans again.
Yeah. I'll go with Miracle, just where he's like whistling and saying again. Yeah,
that's
again.
Great.
I love a good montage, especially a training montage.
All right. And one more from Van Gogh's Sunflowers. If you could choose one animal as a Pokemon champion, what would it be? So you're using like real life animals as like a Pokemon character.
So it's just like what animal would do the best in a fight?
But as a Pokemon.
But I think you get like Pokemon. Like Pokemon, like a small animal can beat a Snorlax.
Okay.
Do you know what that means, Wes?
It's a different language for me. No.
Basically, every animal has been turned into a Pokemon at this point. So just like pick the toughest animal. I don't know. I guess the orca whale, or the killer whale, the orca, I forget what his name is a Pokemon, but I'd just pick that one, I guess.
I'd pick a Pika and give it electric powers, and then your water Pokemon's just toast.
A Pika?
Pika.
You're right. No, it would beat my killer whale. Jeff,
I was thinking of a Pikachu.
You're thinking of Pikachu, yep.
All right, cool. Thanks for asking questions. We're going to keep getting through those. And it's fun. Like, even if we don't answer it, it's fun for us to go through it all.
Yeah. Oh, there was one that I wanted to answer too. Kook Skywalker said, did Wes have bad dreams after delving so deeply into the Glacier Grizzlies case? I thought it was a good answer, or a good question, and like something I wanted to talk about. I've pretty much since day one of working with bears have bad dreams about bears, but they're like kind of good dreams too. Like I get really excited, but then they end up in attacks, and they're weird dreams. But I had a higher than average number of grizzly dreams after investigating Night of the Grizzlies so deeply, and they were a little bit more intense than normal. But I do kind of always wake up from bear dreams disappointed that I woke up, even when they're scary. So it's a good question. Cool. Well, I think that's it. Thanks, everyone, for sticking with us and listening to all our news stories. We'll be back in a couple weeks with another normal episode featuring one animal.
Woo!
What cool. animal that's going to be, who can guess? No one.
Dog? Cat? Who knows?
All right. Love you guys.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible, and if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.